And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this?
A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.
Welcome to the Athletic NBA Show, Monday through on the Athletic Podcast Network. This is Nerder, She Wrote, with your host, Dave Dufour.
With Mo DeKeel.
Are you ready to be entertained?
And Seth Partnow.
Hello and welcome to the Athletic NBA Show. It's Friday. I'm Dave Dufour. Seth and Mo are here. That means it's Nerder, She Wrote. What's up, guys? Game one of the NBA Finals in the books. But before we get to that, we had some breaking news right before we started recording. Frank Vogel is the new head coach of the Phoenix Suns. Signed a five-year deal. We're now getting financial figures on coaches' deals, by the way. That's a whole new world. Guys, Frank Vogel is a championship-winning coach. They do not grow on trees. This is a really good hire for Phoenix, I think.
Hold on. What's the financial, Dave? Say the financial number real quick.
5 years, $31 million, which feels like a steal considering guy that Phoenix just fired got
a championship. He won a championship, and the other guy got a massive pay raise.
It's amazing. Shout out to Monty Williams' agent. I mean,
shout out to 6 weeks of DeAndre Ayton playing with force for getting Monty Williams to a final, and then he could shit on DeAndre Ayton for the next 2 years and fall into the highest paid coaching job in the NBA.
That's great work. That's wild. But I've derailed
the show now with that. Yeah. We should talk about Frank.
Well, let's talk about Vogel. Because listen, Frank Vogel is a championship winning coach. He's got a track record of success. I mean, his Indiana teams were great defensive teams. The Lakers, obviously, he built a really great defense there that won a title a couple years ago. Knows how to deal with stars, you know, knows how to keep the locker room harmonious. It's going to be a more organized situation there, but I expect it to be relatively drama free because Frank Vogel's not a drama guy. I mean, he's just a basketball guy. So I think this is signifying a little bit of a commitment on the defensive end. They're just going to say, Devin Booker, Kevin Durant, you guys are probably enough offense. If we can get some key role players around you that can make some shots, but they are going to, I think they're going to try to build like a top five defense this summer.
I think Kevin Durant's going to enjoy being coached by Frank Vogel. And what I mean by that is it sounds like he's dying to be coached. When he was talking about stuff, ooh, the cat tail. We're close to a cat attack. It's been a minute. I feel like the stuff he was saying when Steve Nash was being let go, and what he liked about Jock Vaughn was like actual practicing and coaching and things like that. I think that's what you're going to get from Frank Vogel. I think that's an important aspect of it. I think you're right, Dave. Focus on the defensive end there. You need more offensive pieces, a little more firepower offensively as well. But those guys, you can find an off. It's not hard to put together an offense with Devin Booker and Kevin Durant as your main guys. And I think that's important. But I think you got to start on the defensive end. I love the hire for them. And I was very happy that they did not hire Doc Rivers, who pulled his name out, I'm sure, once he found out that Frank Vogel was getting the job. But this was a good hire for them, a smart hire for them, and now they got him at a steal.
Yeah, I think I'm on record as saying it's a little silly to have really strong opinion about coaching hires, but I think what Mo said is right, is we have enough track record of Vogel to know that he will have an organized, solid, good defensive scheme. Anytime he's had talent, his teams have been good. Maybe they haven't been the most inventive offensively. There's frankly a question about how inventive you can actually be, as an offensive coach with Kevin Durant, because he's just kind of going to do stuff and get buckets. But no, it's, you know, for a team that is in win now mode, solid is kind of what you're aiming for. Mate, could you hit a home run with a first time coach? Yeah. Do you want to take that gamble knowing you have about a 2-year window the rest of Durant's prime? I can easily justify. No, this is like a solid, good, we know what we're getting guy.
And this is the thing too. And I think people need to understand that, because they're going to look at the end of the Laker tenure. He was handcuffed with the team they gave him after they won the championship, right? Like the whatever, complain about rotations and whatnot and things like that. But like when they gave him Russ, what were you supposed to do with that team? Like, you know, in that instance for Vogel. So I'm excited for him. I think this is a great opportunity for him as well. Good job, Phoenix. That's all I can say. I'm impressed with the hire. I thought they were going to go with Doc, to be honest with you. I thought they were going to go with the splashier name and things like that. But good on them. I think they made the right choice. And to Seth's point, it's hard to go with a first-time head coach learning on the curve, and you got a small window.
Not a lot of Darvin Hams floating around out there, to be honest with you. Like a guy who can step in and has been around long enough and is good enough at running an organization first year that you can make even a deep playoff run, I would argue. Frank Vogel is going to build a good defense there. I have no doubt. I guess, you know, we'll see what they do as far as free agency goes, or if they've got some trades up their sleeves or something, because they need some guys now.
They need to turn DeAndre Ayton into multiple players, but that's a different.
Well, we'll see.
Podcast, I mean, for a different day.
Or maybe he just needs a different.
He's not that dude. I'm not going to allow this. I'm not going to allow this. We're not fucking falling for this again. He is not that dude. He's not that dude. He doesn't play hard, play tough. He doesn't play like he really fucking has a chip on his shoulder or anything like that. He plays a super finesse game when they need him to play like a monster, and he's not going to. He's not that dude. I'm sorry, Dave. I'm just not going to allow it.
Wait, are we talking about DeAndre Ayton or Bam Adebayo in game one?
Oh,
good segue.
All right. Well, this is a perfect time to talk. Game one of the NBA Finals, the Denver Nuggets looked dominant like they did all year in taking game one. What are your big takeaways from game one, guys? Let's start with Mo. Biggest takeaway from game one for Miami?
Just 2 free throws. And like it was, and it wasn't, hey, the refs screwed us. It was legitimately the right officiating. Only 2 free throws for that team. They didn't play with any sort of force. The Bam, with all his points, didn't really get into Jokic. Jokic only getting 1 foul, and that was off of Hayward Highsmith play. I think Jimmy looks extremely like either just hurt, out of it, not confident with his legs or whatnot, but like they need him to get to the line 8 to 9 times a game. They need Bam to get to the line 5 or 6 times a game. And they just simply were not attacking. And just 2 free throws is such a shocking number.
Seth, I'm going to cut Mo off before we can get to this point. But we watched in the last series, the driving kick game for Miami, just it ate up Boston. I mean, Boston, of course, has bad defensive principles. They were helping off one pass away, driving him crazy. But they did not penetrate at all against Denver. And part of this was Denver was mixing up their coverages, but also Jimmy Butler only attempted 8 drives in the game. And that has been a signature of their success in the playoffs, him being aggressive, getting to the basket, getting to the line, and collapsing the defense. But man, I actually think Denver really defended well, just as much as Jimmy Butler was tired. I thought Denver's defense did a good job.
I think that they're so happy anytime they're playing the pick and the Jimmy Bam pick and roll 2-on-2, and they're so happy anytime that Bam wants to catch the pocket pass and like raise up for that little floater. Like Bam can make that shot. But you're talking about like the drive and kick principles and collapsing defense and stuff like that. Oh, he'll make half those shots. If he's making half those shots and not getting fouled and they're not getting kickouts to threes, like that's almost a Budenholzer-esque math win for Denver's defense. And, you know, people have, yeah, Bam had a good game. I don't think he had an impactful game. He had 26.
25 shots, though.
25 shots.
No free throws.
No free throws. And I think that both Mo and I were talking about before the game, we didn't want to see Bam just like, I'll go ahead and say settle. Like, it's good that he's being aggressive looking for a shot, but settling for that floater instead of really trying to get into Jokic. I think, you know, AD had problems trying to go at Jokic in the last series because he's trying to go through him. I think Bam has the ball handling and quickness to kind of go to the side of him and maybe force some contact. Maybe, you know, Jokic can get handsy. Maybe he'll go for a strip or something like that. And he just there was maybe two times last night where he put any sort of that kind of pressure at all on Jokic.
And the thing that's really kind of frustrating, it's when he does put a body into him, he then goes to a step back. He's going the wrong way. It's got to be step through, got to be through Jokic in that stuff. You got to put fouls on Jokic. You got to make it so that Denver can't just say, hey man, Jokic gets to chill on defense. And I honestly, like, I didn't feel like he did much. And I think that's one of those things where, you know, despite the gaudy numbers of the look at the points and things like that, that's when you got to dive deeper into it. And it's frustrating in that sense. And, you know, it's something that Miami fans know all too well with that. It was the least impactful 26 points I think we've had in the NBA finals.
Yeah. And he had 5 assists in the game, which is fine, but like, they're not getting, he's not generating stuff for other people. It was, you know, these were assists where the defense happened to send a second guy and he found somebody. It wasn't like he was operating at the elbow. I mean, he touched the ball so much in this game. I mean, it was, he dominated the ball for them. And I just felt like it was exactly what Denver wanted.
Yeah. And I think I think some of the stuff Miami did was good. They had some great baseline cutting off of those things, off of the pick and rolls and things like that, and so on. And we know, listen, we can belabor the shooting all we want. I think they will shoot better.
Yeah.
But I also think Denver will shoot better, so it'll probably even out.
Denver was 8 of 27 from 3. Michael Porter Jr. had a couple rim in and out. I mean, he was 1 of 7, but and felt like he was just like on fire at one point, which is funny to say. But Denver's going to shoot better. I think Miami, like, this is about what they shot in the regular. I mean, this is like, they're a 35% three-point shooting team. They got really great looks and they missed a bunch of them. I thought the ones in the first quarter, you know, we were talking before the ding. I felt like the ones in the first quarter, those misses, Gabe Vincent, Max Strus, they were tight. They were hard and front rim. Those weren't no legs. Those were NBA Finals game one. Those lights are really bright misses to me. And not to say that those guys aren't tired, but it felt like they played a little tight early.
Let me ask you guys this, because it's always a thing that we talk about with Denver. Did you feel like the altitude affected these guys?
I didn't, actually, to be honest. I thought that, I think the place you look at that is Miami did a lot of things well this game. One of the things they did well this game, and where you might expect the altitude to show up, their transition defense was basically perfect. And so in terms of them getting up and down the floor and moving and stuff like that, I don't think, aside from Jimmy, I don't really think I felt like there was a lot of fatigue showing up in Miami. I think they just didn't make shots, and Denver is better.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I didn't think it was. I didn't think it was the altitude there for them, in the way that you thought it might affect them. I didn't even think it was, hey, we went 7 games and we're tired. The way Dave's saying, you know, it's a great point from you, Dave, about the shots. Like, it didn't seem like it was a legs thing. It was a, oh crap, we're in the finals. Usually, thing. Look,
when the legs go and guys miss front rim, it's a more of a floaty jump shot. It's hard for me to explain, but like, if you've been in the gym enough, you've seen it. Like, it's a more of a floaty jump shot than almost a line drive. And these guys were, I mean, it's pucker season, guys. You know, like, it's the finals. Like, you, if you're not nervous playing in the finals, there's a problem.
Mo, you can attest to this. I think it is hard to, I've never experienced the finals as part of a team, but I definitely experienced the difference between like first round and conference finals. And it's just like, you know, hey, they have the studio set up on premises. Hey, there's Charles Barkley. There's whoever else standing next to where I usually stand for the, it's all of those differences, like the those things that break up your routine, that just make it, that other it a little bit. And you, and so I think there's some of that.
Ken Young being on the sidelines really kind of distracted them. The Denver courtside seats.
Leslie Chow, was that his name in the
hang on. All right. Let me get us back on the rails. Okay. So my big takeaway, guys, game one, Denver is big, real big. Miami, small, real small. Aaron Gordon had 12 points in the first quarter playing bully ball. Not Jokic, Aaron Gordon. And I think that this is the crux of the series. They can't guard Michael Porter Jr. and Aaron Gordon and Nikola Jokic. When those three guys are on the court together, they just don't have the size to hold up. One of those guys is going to be able to get a mismatch inside.
I think a lot of the Gordon stuff was a result of kind of some of the missed shots. A lot of those were, even though, like I said earlier, Miami did a good job taking away kind of the initial look in transition, a lot of those were like missed shot cross match, Gordon rim run, and Denver is patient and is able to, you know, Vincent or Martin or somebody is battling hard against Gordon, but eventually like he gets position and then puts him in the basket. So I think that a few more of those shots go in and maybe that dries up a little bit. But at the same time, I think you're right that like Denver is big while still playing small, still playing very perimeter oriented offensively. They're still have a size advantage, I think, every spot on the floor.
Looking for an assist with your credit card, but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
I think that's why I was so confused with them starting Martin for the Heat. And I think, like, I get the, you know, Martin needs to play heavy minutes, all that stuff. It's easier when he's starting versus coming off the bench and whatnot. I still would have, and I know the problems with Love, I still would have given Love 4 minutes to start the game. Just to start the game and go.
He didn't
even
play. Now, that didn't play at all.
I mean, I think it makes sense in the they're so afraid of Murray attacking him in the pick and roll. Murray and Jokic pick and roll and him having to defend that. But I think you got to give that a look. I think you got to just the size of it. And they didn't get killed on rebounding or anything like that or so on. But I just think the size across the board. So you need to have a little more in that sense. And I think that's one of those things that, like, I just, when they started, I was like, I'd have probably gone back to Love and then worked from there. Because then you also weaken your bench when you pull Martin out of your bench rotation. And you're not playing Love, so now you've shrunk your rotation. And then the other thing, too, is just like, man, just don't play Cody Zeller. Like, what are we doing with this? You know, like, just the Zeller minutes. Like, why? It's just not, it's not good. It's an instant negative. I'm sorry, but it's just like those things are frustrating with that. And I know we're bemoaning the size, but I would go to starting Love and having a little more size to start the game if I were them. And I'm surprised that that's how they started game one.
I agreed with, we talked about this before the game and I agreed with you then. And I still agree with you that that's the way I would lean. I will say that in fairness to Spo, I think they're thinking about it on the offensive end as well. And you have to say that we didn't hate their offensive process in the first quarter. They got good looks.
Right.
Like Strus got, you know, in the first half, Strus had, I don't remember how many of them were the first quarter.
But it was 0 for 6 from 3, 0 for 7 from the field. And yeah. We went through all
and
of
they
them.
Were, and they were like five of them were wide open. Like they were getting good looks for a good shooter and they just didn't knock them down. So from a standpoint of, did we get what we wanted out of this? Yeah, they kind of did. The shots just didn't go in. If the shots aren't going in, then of course what you're giving up size-wise defensively becomes more magnified. So I say all that by way of saying this isn't an easy call. It's a 55-45 decision that, you know, whether they went the right way or the wrong way, it didn't break their way in game one.
And that's nitpicking. This is coaching. This is in the finals. Yeah. This is what your decisions are going to be. They're hard decisions, every one of them. And that's just the way it is. And you know, like, I mean, Dave, do you remember how nuts I went last year when they didn't start Kevon Looney?
Hey, listen,
I wanted to throw my laptop out of the window. Like I just didn't make sense. And I feel like in this one here, I don't feel like it's that hard of a decision though, Seth, at the end of the day. Like even though they got the like you said, better shots and things like that. I just felt like just look at the fact that Gordon crushed all their smalls. And it still might have happened, and we know how the misses, you're right. I agree with you on that point and things like that. But they were just you're starting so small to begin with. Who's the smallest guy on the Nuggets starting five? Jamal Murray at 6'6". Like you're in a tough spot, man, when you're going to start small. I just think you're putting yourself in a very weak position to begin the game if you're starting that way. And I'm not saying Love should get 25 minutes, just four.
I mean, at least a few. I mean, also let's not forget what he does for their transition offensive game too. Like, I mean, there's more than just, shoot. Yeah. And he spaced the floor a little bit. So I'm with you there. How does Miami approach Jokic? Game one, guys, they were trying to play him straight up. That doesn't work. Every time you send the help, he finds a shooter. This is what this man does. I don't know that Miami has an answer. Nobody else has so far.
Here's the thing. And this goes to sort of maybe a broader point when people are not to relitigate the MVP debate, but I will a little bit insofar as, you know, okay, this player had better top line numbers than that player. This game was sort of a perfect illustration of Jokic is a guy who doesn't feel the need to get his numbers. He had like five shot attempts through three quarters because he was just kind of, they were rocking and rolling. He was kind of doing his thing. And if he had a layup, he'd shoot a layup. If the ball came to him at the end of the shot clock, he'd toss up a jumper. They didn't really see Jokic really try to impose himself on the game until there was like they had that little bit of a fake spurt with about 5 minutes left. And then Jokic was like, all right, well, I'll go do my thing now and just, you know, set up a couple open threes, which they missed, and then got a couple buckets himself. So I don't even think we've seen like the fully operational battle station of Jokic in game one.
Yeah. I mean, one, Dave, when you said, like, what does Miami do? I don't know. Nobody does. Nobody knows what to do with this dude. I mean, look, so like we're going to hear a whole bunch of stuff leading into game two. Let Jokic get 50 and stop everybody else. Okay, good luck with that. Like we've seen that before. Double Jokic. Okay, we've seen that before. Zone's going to be a real problem for them, although it worked pretty well for them in the fourth quarter, but I think that had more to do with the Nuggets being a little lazy than anything else. And I think when you're watching Jokic, it's a hard – he's just, this is what makes him the best player right now in the NBA. What do you do? You have to, and I don't think Miami has the guys to do it. Like we talk about just their size mismatch with all of those things. He eats up Bam. It doesn't like, he just destroys Bam on the other end of the court. And you know, I'm not blaming Bam in that way. He's just that damn good. And it's along those lines. So like, okay, we're going to put somebody else on him and then have Bam rotate over. Okay. They saw that all last series, the whole Rui Hachimura adjustment, you know, from heaven apparently, and that was the supposed to be the game changer. Well, they got swept. Like it's like I don't know. I would hate having to do a defensive game plan against Jokic. Like I'd be bald. I would have lost hair.
Yeah, I don't know that there's a solution there.
I mean, the solution, I mean, it's you know, I know we want to talk about adjustments. I think going back to old adjustment number one, play better. Like, oh, yes. I think, you know, some of their defensive problems, like I said, if they make shots, some other defensive problems clear up. They didn't lose this game on the defensive end. They lost this game on the offensive end.
Yep.
I think if we get more aggression going to the rim from Bam, from Jimmy, not only does that, you know, put fouls on Jokic, perhaps, it also, your defense is better after. Like, your defense is never better than a possession after you shoot free throws. So just that allows them to, you know, set up their defense. Maybe allows them to switch defenses sort of on the fly between that kind of nifty 3-2 zone they're showing, or how they're going to, you know, double Jokic and how they're going to rotate and stuff like that. Allows you to set those up. So I think that's the most important thing is, all right, if we actually shoot the ball okay and we get our main guys, you know, aggressively going to the bucket and we still got nothing, now we're worried. But I don't think they can feel like they, even though it's weird because they didn't play badly, but they didn't play well. And then they certainly didn't play well enough for the talent disadvantage that they're at.
Well, I mean, but the funny thing there is the Nuggets, it feels like they played great, but then you can look at the box score and you can say, wow, they're so far below what we know that they could play like on any given night. So,
I mean, this was a stealable game for Miami to a degree. And there was a play, and Seth knows it because I called it right away. There was a play in the third quarter. They go on a run to start the third quarter. And I forget how much it was or whatnot, but they were rolling and it looked, you know,
like a 7-0 run to start the quarter, I think.
Right. And you know, there's a play where I think it was off of a handoff and Bam rolls. The Nuggets have a blown coverage. I forget who it was, but hits Bam with a bounce pass. He's going to the hoop along the baseline. And Jamal Murray rotates over. And instead of, and this is where we criticize Bam, instead of going to dunk, and it's not about dunking. It's about, hey, if I go to dunk and be aggressive, I'm more likely to get the foul call than anything else. But instead, he tries to go through with a layup with Jamal Murray rotating over. He misses it. And then Jamal Murray takes it the other end, and it's an and one. Run over, run killer. There are plays that are run killers. And then from that, it started a Denver run. And it didn't feel like they really had much of a chance after that. Like, it looked like they started to get something going. And that's kind of more to the aggression point of those things. But to your point too, Dave, like, Denver played okay. Denver played a very regular season type game for them. You know, to the point where end of the fourth quarter, they're dicking around when they're in the zone.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service that you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
You know, if I would have applied myself, I could have gone to the NBA.
You think so?
Yeah, I think so. But it's just like, it's been done. You know, I didn't want to, I was like, I don't want to be a follower. Hi, I'm Jason Concepcion.
And I'm Shea Serrano. And we are back. We have a new podcast from Wondery. It's called Six Trophies.
Woo!
And it's the f***ing best.
Each week, Shea Serrano and I are combing through all the NBA storylines, finding the best, most interesting, most compelling stories, and then handing out six pop culture themed trophies for six basketball related activities.
Trophies like the Dominic Toretto, I Live My Life a Quarter Mile at a Time trophy, which is given to someone who made a short-term decision with no regard for future consequence.
Or the Christopher Nolan Tenet trophy, which is given to someone who did something that we didn't understand.
Catalina Wine Mixer trophy.
Ooh, the Lauryn Hill, you might win some, but you just lost one trophy. And what's more, the NBA playoffs are here, so you want to make Six Trophies your go-to companion podcast through all the craziness. Follow Six Trophies on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. Listen ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus.
And they don't do a great job with it. They didn't attack the nail. And then when Jokic finally said, all right, I had enough, he put his coffee down and walked over to the nail and then, you know, went straight to, you know, a couple of buckets.
Well, this is the funny thing. Aside from Jokic, nobody for Denver really had a great shooting night. Jamal Murray was 11 of 22 from the field, right? 22 shots to score 26 points for Murray. Not like a great night for Murray. Jokic, obviously, 12 shots to score 27 is, you know, this is what he does. But I just, this team,
we know what their offensive ceiling is. And when you look, it's just like, wow, they really didn't even hit it. And it felt like they walked through this game.
The second half was weird. Yo, I forgot Aaron Gordon was in the game after the way he played it.
Well,
the
intensity dropped for them big time. I mean, and I wonder if, I don't know if you guys picked up on this, but Jokic started the fourth quarter. And normally, he starts out on the bench there. And I wonder if this was Michael Malone trying to say, hey, look, you know what? Let's get back into gear and turn this back up a notch.
So I think that even though Gordon didn't really, I think he only took two shots after the first quarter. I think he was still impactful insofar as to shut that off. Miami had to put Jimmy on him, had to put Jimmy right. Butler on him. And now you're asking Jimmy Butler, who's giving up, 4 inches and 30 pounds. Like, he did a good job, but we're bemoaning kind of the lack of aggression and sort of the lack of pop Jimmy has offensively. You're going to ask him to lean on Aaron Gordon every possession defensively and ask him to do that, four rounds deep in a playoffs where he's had to put the cape on, just by occupying Butler on defense, Gordon's size was impactful in the second half.
Yeah, but I'm not going to give Jimmy a pass because we're crushing Bam for that. And it's the same thing. He's got to go against Jokic, and he needs to. This is the NBA Finals. And it's like I said a few podcasts ago. This is fucking hard. It's supposed to be. Now, it didn't look like it for the Nuggets, but it's supposed to be hard. And I think this is what we're seeing with Miami and this stuff. This is what sucks about this is a terrible matchup for Miami. At the end of the day. This is a terrible matchup. This isn't something that's really a series where I feel like, hey, they can do it. I was adamant. Seth's going to account for it. During the Knicks series, the Heat are going to the finals because I felt like they'd be the tougher team in all of these series and the toughest team in the Eastern Conference. They're not tougher than the Nuggets. And I'm not saying that to say the Heat aren't tough, but just the Nuggets are also tough. And I think they have a lot more talent behind that as well. And I think that's the issue in this series for the most part. And, there's a couple more moves I think Miami could play. Not a lot. More Highsmith. I think that's a guy, like, if you don't want to start Kevin Love and don't want to start small, I'd probably start Highsmith and go from there. I thought he's been really good for them in the short minutes he gets throughout the playoffs. I think they had some good stuff. The Jimmy Bam pick and roll was good for them. I thought they got a good Kyle Lowry game. I thought Duncan Robinson, even though he didn't shoot well, did enough to occupy guys and was aggressive for him and continuing to make plays off the dribble, which is still kind of funny to see.
Duncan Robinson play like this, by the way, from now on. This is like a much better player.
This is development, and he's gotten to that point, right? And I think the stuff there, but like at the end of the day, it's like, okay, but all of this is just running up against a wall. And that wall is the Denver Nuggets.
I think we've made a conscious effort to not do this, but we're still doing the kind of thing where we get into the micro and the macro. Let's zoom way out. Denver is really good. Denver has been by a wide margin the best team in the playoffs. Like from start to finish, they've played maybe one bad half of basketball across the entire playoffs. And we knew, I think we've talked about it all season. We knew that they had a good playoff thing going. They have their top six guys who can't get played off the floor that can play many different ways without changing personnel. Like we're talking about all these adjustments Miami can make, put this guy in, put that guy in, do this, do that. And for Denver, the adjustments are, well, instead of running the pick and roll with Jokic and Murray, how about running with Jokic handling and Gordon setting the screen? Jokic handling, and they have all these different solutions that they can just do on the fly because they have these six versatile, tough, skilled, big, even Bruce Brown, who plays big, plays bigger than he is. And so I think that all comes back to Denver is really fucking good, and that's where we should start and end the discussion. If as we think is going to happen, Denver wins this finals pretty easily. I don't want to hear anything about like road to the finals or Denver has earned this from day one of the playoffs. And we should start and end there with celebrating. This is a fucking great team with the best player in the world.
Only adjustment, Seth, I'd make. They've earned this from day one of the regular season.
How about years in the making? We have hammered Nikola Jokic for years now. Oh,
You can put up the stats, but you can't win. I mean, like, this is the culmination. But it's the thing that we've all been saying. I never did it, but it's the thing we've all been saying. This team healthy is one of the two or three best teams in the league and would have been, I think. This wouldn't have been their first finals appearance. This team is really good, and now we're seeing it come to fruition.
You're right on that, Dave, and I think if Jamal Murray doesn't get hurt that year they traded for Aaron Gordon, that's a team that's at least in the conference finals, if not the championship, and this is a team that we would have been talking about the past few years in that way. But we were, you know, the 2 years of injuries killed us, and I think that's kind of the deal with that stuff. But as you said, years in the making. But also, and this is a really important thing here, and this also goes to Miami. It's an organization not firing a coach just to fire a coach. You know, listen, first off, let's just shout out Pat Riley. It's gutsy when LeBron James in his prime asks you if you still have the itch to coach. And he's like, no, I'm backing my guy. We know a lot of front office guys, team presidents with former coaches, championships, whatnot, would come running down the sideline to coach that team and take all the credit. That's something there for Miami. But more importantly, because it's even harder for Denver with everything, two-time MVP, you know, flame out in the playoffs, all the criticism that goes with that, everybody ignoring the injuries and all that stuff. And we've seen teams fire coaches for less and whatnot. Would anybody have batted an eye if they fired Michael Malone last year? I don't think people would have been like, no, he's just couldn't have gotten you.
I would have lost my mind,
but the collective we would have been like, yeah, I don't know if he can get you over the hump or whatnot. Like, I honestly think, you know, this is an important thing of the organization, and other organizations need to take note of that. They stuck with their guy. They believed in their guy. They understood the situation that we're going in. We've talked about it all the time of having alignment throughout your entire organization. That's what Denver has. It's what Miami has. It's not an accident that both these teams are in the finals. They have that perfect alignment. And I think that's something that's probably not talked about enough. And I think really important to understand.
Yep. Well, I hope you guys enjoy the rest of the finals. There should still be games next week when we record. I can't remember the schedule. There's like 4 or 5 days off.
There's games.
I think, game three. So
Nuggets and threes is not
in a week. And but until then, guys, enjoy the basketball. For Seth and Mo, I'm Dave, and this has been Nerder, She Wrote, on the Athletic NBA Show.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a 1-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a 1-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a 1-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.